Hey guys, you're listening to On The Mic Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Drake. In today's episode, I sit down with comedian and writer Jenna Kim Jones. Some of you may know Jenna from her days writing for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I talked to Jenna really about how she got started in writing. I learned that she'd actually worked as an intern for David Letterman and Paula Deen as well. So it was really interesting to hear her background. As well as, you know, what inspires her to write and what she's doing today. It was kind of funny to learn that we had actually been living right down the street from each other while I was living in Burbank. So it was really cool, great insight from Jenna. I really learned a lot from her as well. And it was really exciting to find out what to expect from her comedy shows this coming weekend. So definitely check out everything that Jenna's doing. We talk a lot about a lot of her new writing projects. So make sure to follow Jenna on Twitter and enjoy this episode. So, well, I'm glad you're able to make it here. So how long are you going to be in town for?
A week. I'm going to be here till end of next week. I got some meetings and I'm going to do some radio.
Nice.
It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, you still have family here, so
I do. A place to crash, and I love visiting. And it's nice. It's all rainy today and gross. I love it.
Yeah.
LA is like way too sunny for me.
See, and I love the sun. Like I think it was Daniel Tosh I heard say that he loved living in LA because it skips all the crappy seasons.
Yes, LA is good for that reason. I hate winter. But some days I'm like, ugh, it is just too bright, too cheerful. I just need some clouds. That's my New York side coming out. You know, it's like, I like to be dark sometimes. I'm not dark, that's the thing. But there are days when I won't open the blinds because I'm like, oh my gosh, if it's sunny for one more day, I know I shouldn't complain. I know it's 70 degrees in the winter. I know I shouldn't complain, but I can't help it.
As I've been going out the last few years for the Oscars, just going out for some of the festivities and stuff, I love getting a sunburn in February.
Isn't it weird?
It was great as we were standing at the red carpet last year. Like, we get back to our hotel to actually watch everything, and like, all under my eyes was red, and I was like, that's awesome, because it was like, when we had flown out of here, it was probably 20 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and it was just, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I didn't want to come back.
Oh, no, it's magical. It is. I get sick every time I leave LA. Last year, so we've been in LA for a year, and the first time we left LA, we went to Wisconsin to visit some of my husband's family, and it was like, I was sick the next day. Like,
oh, geez.
The weather change and everything, it was just too much.
Which part of Wisconsin?
That's a good question. Near a big city.
Okay.
Mequon. It's like a tiny town.
Sure, I spent some time in Chippewa Falls. So.
Okay. I don't know where that
is
either.
That's on the far west side, like the border right on Minnesota.
We drove there from Chicago.
Okay.
So it wasn't that far. And we passed the Cheese Castle. So it was worth the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was the first time I ever ate fried cheese, which was delightful.
So the one thing I grew to love up there was like cheddar soup.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Like out here, it's always kind of watered down. Out there, it was like I could feel my arteries clog just sniffing it.
Seriously?
But it was amazing. I would eat several bowls of it.
Yeah, they go all out. It's no joke. But I'm lactose intolerant, so I was like, don't tell anybody, because I feel like it's like against the law there. To be lactose intolerant.
You're just fake chewing. This is great cheese.
Well, I brought like an entire giant bottle of Lactaid and would just pop like three or four pills every time I wanted to eat anything.
That's hilarious. Yeah. People probably be like, oh, she's the Hollywood type with the pills.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
So, well, welcome to the podcast with our special guest, Jenna Kim Jones. So we're thrilled to have. I've been following your career for several years now.
Whoa, that's
so
exciting.
I think I had first really learned about you through X96 probably 5 years ago or so.
Probably. Maybe not even that long ago, but yeah.
Maybe not. I mean, I remember hearing you coined as the one who escaped.
What is that supposed to mean?
So that you had escaped from Utah and were out, and we're out
right.
making it out there.
Living the dream. I have had some really fun experiences.
So I bet. I mean, just as I've kind of looked through some of your resume and stuff that you've done, it's just like, holy crap. Like, it's some big stuff, and it's like, I like looking at my resume, and I'm like, I've done a lot for South Jordan.
Well, no, yeah. No. I think, you know, I've done a lot of fun stuff, but I have a lot to go. I mean, I have barely even, I feel like, scratched the surface of, like, you know, I mean, I just moved to LA. I'm new there. I don't know anybody. I'm just trying to figure it out, you know. Leaving New York was pretty scary because I was just used to it. I had a great job, cool life. You know, I loved stand-up there. It's totally different in LA. Totally different, which is fine. I need a good change, you know. You gotta...
You think it's more cutthroat in New York or LA as far as the comedy scene goes?
It's totally different. I think in LA, you have a lot of actors doing stand-up because...
Because their agent told them to.
Right. It's another way to get their foot in the door. Whereas in New York, it's a little bit... I feel like the stand-up is a little more pure. You know, you've got people who, like, just really love stand-up and they want to do stand-up. So I kind of miss that attitude. Because in LA, it's like all these comedians talking about how great they are. And you're like, what? No, you're not supposed to compliment yourself. That is not the art of stand-up. You know, it's just, it's weird.
The first time I ever went to open mic at the Comedy Store, I remember sitting there with Jordan, who is the other co-host of this, but he couldn't be here today. But Jordan and I sitting there and watching half of the stand-ups and just kind of like, this isn't funny.
It's weird.
Like, it was really weird. Having seen, you know, different stand-up up here, and, I mean, even down in Vegas, and being around to see some stand-up, and, yeah, it definitely was weird, and you could tell that it was people that were, like, their agents, like, you need to get out there and and do it. And as I've met comics from New York, I don't know if you've met Andy Gold out here. I mean, Andy just knows, you know, you put your nose to the grindstone and go, where he's been in New York for almost a year now, and, I mean, yeah, he gave us a little bit of insight, too, of how different it is.
It's really different. You don't have, you just, it's, I can't, it's hard to explain it, but I would be really interested actually in hearing more about Andy's experience. Cause I have a little bit different experience where, like, when I started, I was working at Daily Show and I had a lot of people like encouraging me and like, you know, helping me, giving me advice, which was super helpful. And like, I'm forever grateful to those people forever and ever. But I would love to listen to Andy. Cause I just think, man, he's brave. You know, he is just like, I'm going to do it. And that's the way to do it though. Because the thing is, if you are really good at stand up, you will get noticed. Mm. If you're not.
Yeah. If they forget you,
you're gone. Yeah, exactly. There's so many people that do stand up. And in LA, it's almost embarrassing when you're like, yeah, I'm a stand up and a writer. And everyone's like, so am I. We're all the same.
I almost tried to keep that side of me just, like, quiet for a little bit because I knew, like, everybody and their dog. I mean, you'd go into a grocery store out there. And it was hilarious. One night we were in the Vons out there and walking around, and I bumped into the trumpet player for Conan's basic cable band.
Right.
And it was just, like, it was funny because he kind of looked at us like, you know who I am. And it was like an awkward exchange, and then we passed, and then we saw each other again. And, I mean, it was funny because, yeah, you'd bump into everybody out there that's in the industry, whether it would be, I mean, one night I saw the producer of the Tonight Show in there, and, I mean, it was always just bumping into somebody that was in the industry. And so, yeah, I didn't want to be like, huh, I'm a writer too.
Right? That's how I feel sometimes.
And have them look at me and be like, I'm sure you are.
Right. So is everybody, buddy. Yeah, exactly. Like, how many screenplays do those people, unfortunately, have to get thrown at them all the time? Yeah. It's a weird place. We saw the other day, we were driving through Burbank, and we saw Jay Leno driving one of his crazy vintage cars. It was pretty crazy.
What was it? His little Bart? Was it the Barbie car that he...
I don't know. No, it's like one of those, like, big, like, clunker sort of, like, what you'd see in The Great Gatsby. Yeah.
Now, he did a bit the other night that there was actually a news story out here where a couple of little girls had left their Barbie Jeep just parked on the side of the road, and it actually got ticketed and impounded.
Are you kidding me?
Dead serious. And so Leno played it off that somebody had actually bought it from the impound, and then it had him driving in onto the Burbank Studios lot.
What a... How much did they get charged?
I'm not sure. I saw just a quick clip of it.
I mean, those things are only like $200 anyway, right? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more funny that a cop took the time to do the paperwork for it instead of picking up the Jeep and putting it on their lawn.
Busy day for that cop,
I think it was in, I think I want to say it was an Alpine. So a really busy day.
Real busy. Oh my gosh, that's great.
So when you, what made you first decide that you wanted to get into comedy and writing?
Oh, that's a good question. I have always been kind of obsessed with comedy. So, I mean, you probably heard me say this before if you've heard me talk about this, but, like, I loved Letterman growing up, was, like, obsessed with the show, yeah. And I would watch it every single night, and I, like, saved all my money to buy my own television to put it in my room so no one would bug me when I would watch my comedy. And so it was, you know, I just loved it. So when I got into college, I was going to do, like, musical theater performing and singing, but I didn't really like the people. No offense if you're a singer actor, but I just didn't get along. I was not, like, interested in being vulnerable, and
right.
I wasn't interested in, like, being cheesy and over the top, and I would always try to just make a joke of it because it would make me so nervous and uncomfortable, so I kind of gave that up and thought, oh, I'll just write, because that's what I love. I'll write comedy. So I ended up majoring in that in college. I did producing and writing for TV with, like, more of my emphasis in sitcom or, like, you know, a comedy screenplay, that kind of thing. So when I got to Daily Show, I was just working as an assistant, and I was really bored. And, like, I mean, it was a great job.
Yeah.
And I was busy at the job, but, like, part of me was just like, I'm not fulfilled. I'm excited about the job, but I'm not excited about my own personal, what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I saw my coworkers at a show on the Lower East Side one night. We went to this little tiny bar, and they were doing a show, and I remember sitting in the front row and, like, anticipating all their jokes, like, oh, I know where this joke is going. You know, I kind of could tell what they were doing and could figure it out, and I even remember my boss at the time, he messed up a punchline on stage, and I shouted out what the punchline should have been. And he was like, thanks a lot, Jenna. I get it. Like, you know what you were talking about. Well, you know. So then I realized, like, maybe I want to do it. Like, maybe this is what I could do. Maybe I should try it. So I talked to a bunch of people at work, like, what do you think about me doing stand-up? You know, and of course, everyone's really nice and supportive, like, sure, try it, you know. And so I wrote a whole bunch of jokes that were terrible, and I performed them at a Mormon singles activity talent show thing. It was so bad. I mean, it was brutal. But I remember getting off the stage and being like, yeah, I liked that, even though I was so bad.
Even though you just totally bombed.
It was so bad. And so then I started going to open mics, and I would panic before, like, 24 hours before I knew I was doing an open mic, would just be, like, a nervous wreck. Beyond nervous, because it just sucked so bad to bomb. Like, it was just this painful experience, but for some psycho reason, I kept doing it. So, I did that, and I just kept going, and I would do, like, a couple open mics a week, because my work schedule was just kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. I couldn't fit much more than that in. And actually, my second show ever, I did that singles thing, and then I did an open mic, and then I went to see my boss's show that he had, and he had this monthly show called Daily Show and Friends, and so I went to watch, and I was backstage hanging out, and he was like, oh, guess what? You're going on next. And I was like, oh, okay, let me go throw up. Yeah, let me just go die a little bit, and then I'll come back. So he basically shoved me on stage, and I did 5 minutes, and to this day, can't remember any of it. I think my opening line was, I'll give you a second for your eyes to adjust to my hair. And then from then on, it's a black, like, I have no idea what happened after that.
How did that go, making fun of yourself on that right away?
I don't know. Like, it was just this, like, I think people were like, oh, she's new. Oh, this is sad. So they were giving me pity laughs.
I know completely how you feel on that. Cause, like, I hadn't done a ton of open mics. Like, I'd done them very sporadically over the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the last, like, solid one I had to do was finally at Wise Guys. I'd never done a Wise Guys one.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just interviewed Keith Stubbs. And
yeah.
So it's like, we knew Keith not only was going to be there, but be there watching us.
Mm-hmm.
And we signed up, and I was nervous as it was, because I was like, more of the comedians around here know me now. And
right?
So I can't suck.
It does take your street cred down a little bit.
Yeah. So it was like, I knew I had to do well. And so I'm sitting there getting nervous, and I'm watching every major comic in Utah start filtering through the door. And I'm just like, why of all nights do all of them have to be here?
Yeah.
And so like they told us the order we were going in, and then they just started trickling in some of the majors. And so we ended up going between Spencer King and Jay Whitaker.
Yeah, no problem.
And so I was just like, that's cool. I'm glad that, you know, they can do well and then we can tank right after.
Sure.
But luckily it went well. And I mean, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be because the light was so bright I couldn't see anybody.
That's the beautiful thing about being on stage. Yep, exactly.
But what was even more nerve-wracking is getting up and then seeing people that I grew up with that I hadn't seen in 10 years that were sitting there. Mm-hmm. And so then it was just like, all right, well, here we go. And luckily it paid off and went well.
Sure.
But you know, I know that is just going to be thrown into it and then just being like, oh, crap.
Yeah, it's terrifying. But the thing is, like, a good stand-up and a nice person who's been there before knows. Because there are very few people who just begin doing stand-up and are awesome at it.
Right.
Like, I mean, you read Steve Martin's book, Bob, like, all those guys who are old school. They all talk about it. Like, you're not amazing at first, you know. You're not going to go out there and knock them dead because you have to figure out, one, your style. You got to, you know, figure out, you change, your writing style changes. It's not like when you write down on a piece of paper. It's totally different.
Yeah, but I was writing 5-6 years ago. I can't even remember now, and I'm glad I can't
because exactly.
It was probably just atrocious. I thought I was funny.
Right.
But I wasn't studying comedy to really understand it. And so
exactly.
I'm sure it was borderline fart jokes that were just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. There's nothing wrong with a few fart jokes and then.
Nothing wrong with them whatsoever, but mine were probably just the typical, like, 12-year-old boy.
Totally. Well, what I learned really quick was, like, I could write a lot of words, you know what I mean? But sometimes I found that, man, my jokes are so cluttered. And I had to learn how to, like, step back and totally, like, tear the joke down to where it's, like, just enough wording. Like, these words are very specific and they fit in this little specific joke, and that's how, you know, that's how it works.
Right.
But yeah, I think my boss, after he threw me on stage and I bombed, was really proud of me. Like, he was really excited for me because he's like, I can't believe you did that. Yeah. Like, I can't believe you went through with it and, like, you were okay with it. And so, you know, that helped. And because I had performed a lot growing up, I had the confidence to be on stage. I just didn't have the material yet. So that was nice because I kind of, you know, I didn't have to learn. I was still really scared, but I didn't have to learn to have, like, a stage presence necessarily. I just had to learn how to be funny, basically. I grew up being funny. Like, you know, I was a kid who was a smart aleck and, like, said stupid things and got people to laugh, but it's different when you're writing and performing on stage.
Yeah, anybody, I think, that would hate what I do for it can all blame my 6th grade teacher, because that's where I got my first taste, was growing up with it. She made me the court jester when we did Macbeth.
Oh my gosh.
And so my little 11-year-old brain, all I'm focusing on is I'm getting laughs.
I'm the funny guy, yeah.
And so now the teachers all through now college and everything have had to deal with that.
It's all her fault.
It is all her fault.
Yeah. I think for me it was always like, I mean, a little bit it was a defense mechanism. You know, if you feel insecure, you can laugh about yourself. And so I think there was a little bit of that, but I just also enjoyed being funny. I hated serious feelings. Ugh.
It's that feeling too when you're not even meaning to be funny, when it's just your natural instinct to say something and people just die laughing.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm sure you've had the experience where you do that and people start laughing like, what did I say?
I know. And sometimes you have to realize that, yes, that instinct is there, so don't try so hard.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you end up like trying to force it because you're like, I'm supposed to be the funny one.
Yeah.
You just step back and be calm, you know.
And I know what I've started doing is I have my notepad that's always in my phone that I'll just have a thought pop into my mind and I'll just test it randomly if it gets brought up in conversation, or I'll just drop it somewhere and see the reaction it gets.
Totally.
Because either people are going to be like, oh, that's an interesting thought. Or they're going to laugh and I can be like, okay, I can work this now into a joke.
Totally. I do that all the time.
Yeah, I've been trying that. I recently started interning for X96 in the mornings. And so some of the people I've worked with, I'm like, they like stand-up. Let's see where this goes.
Sure.
So, and I think that's been a good outlet, because I know they'll be straight up and be like, that sucked. Don't ever say that.
You do have the perk of them being honest with you. I do appreciate that. That helps. My husband is brutally honest with me when I test jokes on him. And it's like, you know, I could take offense to that, or I could appreciate it and realize that, like, yeah, not everything I say is a, you know, home run.
Yeah, I'll ask my wife before I tweet something or put it on Facebook. I'm like, is that funny? She's like, I don't know.
Don't you hate that response?
I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? And so I'll just put it out there, and I'm like, we'll see. And then it'll get like one like or 100 likes, and it's like, okay, yeah, definitely bombed.
Twitter is and Facebook are amazing resources for that. Amazing.
And people on social websites too, and when they're like fans and stuff, they have no problem telling you that it sucked. That's one thing that you have to kind of love, as much as the Twitter trolls are just atrocious at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's great that they will turn around and be like, yeah, that wasn't fun. Yeah. Try again.
Try again. Yeah, exactly. No, I love it. I love Twitter.
Yeah.
I think Twitter is like the best of all the social medias. If we had to drop all of them, I would save Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter, I love just for this. It feels more personal.
It does. I love it for that reason. I love that I can follow comedians and like when I go through my scroll, I get news and funny jokes.
Yeah,
like I love, that's what I love about it. And like, I don't know, I guess for me, people love Instagram a lot and they love Facebook for other reasons. Like I'm not as visual. Like I'm not an artist. I don't see things beautifully and with pictures. I see everything in like words.
Yeah,
because that's just the writer in me, you know. It's like if I write something down, I'll remember it. But if I just saw a picture, it's like, whatever. I just don't see that way. So, like, for me, exactly. But, like, for me, so Instagram's cool and all, but Twitter to me is way more interesting. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
So I know I finally had, like, my first real Twitter troll that he had looked at my name. And because Tim Drake is the big Robin in the Batman series right now.
Oh.
He saw my name was Tim Drake and thought I was trying to like do some spoof account.
Oh my gosh.
And so he tags me and then some girl whose Twitter handle, I think it was like at Red Robin. And it just said at Tim Drake, at Red Robin, fuck you. And we were like I looked at it and I was like, what is this? And so like I started scrolling through it and I was like, this kid thinks that these are spoof accounts. Like,
oh my gosh.
And so I responded back and I was like, care to explain? And like, I usually know don't engage the Twitter trolls.
Sure.
But I had to engage that because I was like, this idiot like, doesn't realize that's my name.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he responds back to me and one of his friends like, holy crap, look at this. And then they were both freaked out that I responded and saw it. Yeah, and I was like, you know that when you tag somebody, they see it, right?
Right, right. Because they don't understand that, like, you know, at some point, you're going to get called out for it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's kind of, like, what I've enjoyed. Lately, it's like, you know that comedian, was that, there was a story in D.C., like, a comedian punched a guy.
I don't remember hearing that.
There was a story that I saw a couple weeks ago where a comedian figured out, there was, like, someone in the crowd who was tweeting jerky things about him, figured out who it was, and then punched him out. And it's like, you know what? At some point, you mean people on the internet are going to pay for it. Not that I'm going to go around punching people, because I could care less. You can say whatever you want to me. But it's just funny that, like, you know, you can hide and say rude things, but, like, at some point, there's going to be some accountability, no?
Did you see the pilot from Marin?
No, I didn't.
Where the pilot is, he gets a Twitter troll and tracks him down.
I'll see.
But he goes with Andy Kindler.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And all of them love Andy. So when he goes in, he's trying to get mad at them, and they're just still making fun of him. And then Andy walks in, and they're like, why are you friends with him?
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was one of the most genius things. Yeah. Because it's like, we've all thought that. Like, who is this Twitter troll? I'm going to find them.
Right. Oh, we've all, I know. When I hear people like, you should just quit now and start having babies because you have the hips for it. And it's like, wow, that's original. Thank you so much. You know, it's just brilliant people. Brilliant.
Yeah, nothing's worse than sexist trolls.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. Real woman haters. Exactly. So, yeah, I don't get tons of people hating on me all the time, but, you know, they're out there.
Yeah, they're out there.
They're out there and they'll say stuff on, you know, YouTube videos or whatever. Twitter, Facebook.
For every one that hates you, there's going to be at least five, I would say, that love you and are going to support
exactly. You. For the most part, I know when you go online, it kind of seems like everyone's terrible. But for the most part, I like to believe that people are, the majority are nice and good and aren't going to use the mm-hmm. social media platform to just rip on you, you know? You have those few people who think they're brave enough to do it, and
I think the only person that was ever brave enough to do it that succeeded, and it was even before social media, was Andy Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, with his whole wrestling women and all of that, where people thought that this guy, I mean, there was a bunch that were in on it, but at the same time, there were those people that were like, why is this dude wrestling women?
Right.
And people hated him that didn't get it. And I think that was so brilliant, and I can only imagine what that would be, you know, in the social media realm today.
Right.
I mean,
it would be a nightmare. Yeah.
It would be like the Kanye West, Jimmy Kimmel battle, but 10 times worse.
Oh, yeah. Which, by the way, totally fizzled out and was super lame.
I still have not watched last night's episode.
Oh, you need to watch it. I want someone to watch it and talk to me about it, because I watched it this morning and was like, are we really going to let Kanye, get away with this?
I've seen a bunch of the quotes about how he's never done a PR stunt. I was like, I thought that was going to be the name of your next album.
Right. Seriously. Never done a PR stunt. He's a creative genius. Why should he not say he is? I should be able to say it. That's what I am. And then he talks about, breaking the glass ceiling and all these ways and, becoming the next Ralph Lauren. And, Jimmy Kimmel just kind of, is
the
nice
next Ralph Lauren with this $120 white t-shirt.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't understand. And he's married, or he's got a kid with Kim Kardashian who I don't care how you put it, is not, the greatest person in the world. You know, and his ego is so giant. But he completely acted like it was completely justified on the show. Yeah. And I think people are, buying into it a little bit. And I just feel
scary.
Why do I need to buy into this? Yes, he sounded smart, he said the right things, but when you really step back and look at it, it's no, you're still... I think humility still goes a long way. You don't need to be talking about how you're the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Which is funny because, I mean, with Kimmel, for example, I mean, the prior night he had Elton John on.
Right.
And a week ago, I mean, he shut down Hollywood Boulevard for Paul McCartney and Justin Timberlake.
Right.
And so for Kanye to come on and be like, yeah, I'm the greatest, I'm like, did you see who this guy just had on the last week?
Right.
Like, no, buddy.
Huge stars. People who have, for generations, have been entertaining people. You know, I just...
First time I saw Paul McCartney, I may as well have been a 12-year-old girl at a Justin Bieber concert.
Right.
This man was living legend right in front of me, and it's mm-hmm. I got tears in my eyes seeing him for the first time.
Yeah.
I could give a damn if I saw Kanye in front of me. I'd probably be like, pull your pants up, dude. You could fit a potato sack in.
Well, and he said something he's all ticked off that they said Kim Kardashian will never get a Hollywood star just because she's a reality star. And
doesn't
she
have a star?
I don't know. It's just all this...
I swear she does, right in front of the Dolby Theater.
She might. The thing is, I don't know if he meant a Hollywood star. He said something about her not getting, credit because she's just a reality star. You know, I don't know what it was, but it was just, I just think come on guys, let's just all take a step back and stop taking ourselves so seriously. And just because you call yourself a creative genius, I'm not allowed to make fun of you anymore.
Yeah, if anything, that opens the door more to be made fun of.
Exactly, and you need to learn how to take it.
I mean, you look at people like Paul McCartney or even Steven Tyler. Those guys have been made fun of so much to their face.
Yeah.
And they roll with it, and it makes it that much funnier.
Elton John doesn't get made fun of ever. I mean, all these people. I just don't understand why he gets a pass. I don't know. It really bugs me. So I would be very interested in anybody who wants to talk to me about it.
I will watch it today.
Yeah.
And I will message you until
please
I tell
do,
you my
because
thoughts.
I just feel like he got away with a lot.
Yeah.
With saying a lot. And no one saying you know what? You're still really full of yourself. And that's hard for me.
Which is funny because, I mean, Justin Bieber even did the same thing. Was it the Billboard Music Awards recently?
Probably.
Maybe it was the VMAs where he got booed.
Yeah.
During part of
that,
and was just like, you give me respect, and it's like...
Why?
It's like, you're pissing in a mop bucket behind clubs, you're spitting on fans.
Yeah.
Like, you're a
being carried up the Great Wall of China.
Yeah, being carried up the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
it's like, you know, yeah, it was cool to see, you know, your career take off.
It was being, amazing.
You know, being a kid on YouTube, but we don't owe you guys anything at this point.
No. Like, just do your music. Yeah. Do what you want to do. But don't act like I need to worship you for it.
Yeah, be a legend and rest on your laurels with that. Like,
thank you.
That's the way it should
be. It's really frustrating to me, and I feel like he got kind of a pass, and I feel like people are talking about how he gave this great speech that meant something, but I honestly couldn't follow most of it. Like, I'm like, yeah. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you're very passionate about it. You should give the award to his PR rep.
Right. Like, I don't understand, but okay, that's fine. You and Kim can just be happy and whatever.
Yeah, they can be in their own little world.
So weird. So weird. Sorry. That was my Kanye rant.
No, it's totally fine.
People might disagree. Let me know. I'm very curious. Yeah. I just feel like I'm the only one who's not, like, giving this guy, like, good job, Kanye.
Anytime he speaks at this point, I always just kind of furrow my brow. And
okay, maybe that's what we're all doing. Maybe none of us know what to say.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, what do we do now?
It's the just golf clap.
Exactly.
Like, that was nice.
Like, oh.
I'll get a translator to give that back to me later.
Exactly.
So now, kind of going back to being in New York, okay, doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
How did you really get your gig with The Daily Show? Now, you said you were an assistant. So
yes.
Was that just as a PA to start
off
with?
Mm-hmm. I was a PA for most of my time there. I was a script assistant for a while, and I did... So I started working there because I had interned there.
Okay.
Like a year before I started working there. So when I was in college, I did a bunch of internships. I was at Letterman, Martha Stewart Show, Daily Show, Food Network. I worked for Paula Deen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff. And, gosh, it's been so long. CBS
please,
casting.
Please tell me Paula Deen has like a butter statue of herself somewhere in there.
That we all just make toast and butter from. Yeah. No, she is a nice lady, actually. She's really, really nice. I was really surprised by her recent...
Her little scandal.
Yes. I guess maybe not surprised necessarily, but kind of like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. This is bizarre to me. I mean, I have to admit, there were some times when I did look up recipes on the internet to, like, make sure her recipes, like, would work and things like that. Like, we had some there were some weird practices that I did as an intern there, but I loved working there. And they were really nice. It was a great company. So, and then, and then CBS casting, I think I just said. So, I had a lot of fun in college. The cool thing about Daily Show was, I actually didn't even, like, apply for the internship. My Martha Stewart advisor sent my resume to Daily Show and was like, she's a great intern. You'd be lucky to have her. So they called me and I interviewed, and it was a really fun interview. And I actually became really good friends with the lady who interviewed me. We had like, it was one of those interviews where you're like, let's all be best friends.
Yeah.
This is going to be great. So they offered me the internship and I took it, and it was probably my favorite internship. Letterman was my dream.
Oh, I
of
bet.
All dream. Like, I was so happy to be there, but then it kind of turned out to be this, it was a very tense internship. It was extremely hard. And we worked full time and no pay. Couldn't take classes. Like, it took four months of my life was just dedicated to that show. Which was fine. But it was a little bit stressful. He was kind of set in his way. Like, it was just, the show had been on for so long. It was a machine.
You were just there to basically oil the gears.
Pretty much, yeah. And again, I probably learned the most there about me and about TV and everything, but it was tough. It was tough. But I made some really good friends, too. I mean, I can't say it was all bad, because it was...
Yeah, the networking, especially with someone like Letterman, has got to just be insane.
Yeah, it was awesome. So awesome. So I had a great time there. Went to Daily Show. Had a great time. It was super fun. I was only there 2 days a week as an intern, and we just had a blast. So when I graduated from college, I thought I would move to LA right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually packed everything, shipped it, was like going to LA. It's made a pit stop here in Utah. When I was here in Utah, I got a call from Daily Show. And they're like, hey, do you want to interview for a job? It would just be like freelance for a few weeks. We're looking for people to be in the office when we go on the road. Because this was 2008, so they were on the road for the conventions.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll interview. So I interviewed again, and they hired me. So I lied in my interview and said I still lived in New York, which, in a way, I still kind of lived in New York. So I flew back, got an apartment, started working, and I did 3 weeks, and it was awesome. Loved it. And they're like, okay, great, thanks so much. I'm like, oh, no, I still don't have a job, and I moved back here. What am I going to do? So I got a job at J. Crew. And it was terrible, and
which I understand. That's the retail life.
Yes, got a job at J. Crew, at Rockefeller Center, which was like even more sort of soul crushing because it was 30 Rock.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
you're waving to Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, exactly. Each day. I'm stuck at the J. Crew folding sweaters, but you know, I had to survive. Right. I was broke, so I actually only worked at J. Crew for like a week, and then. Daily Show called me again, and they're like, you know, we really enjoyed having you. Would you like full-time work? I was like, yes, please. Goodbye, J. Crew. I will definitely work there. So I ended up working there for almost 4 years.
I can imagine that being like one of those sitcom-y moments where you get the call at work and just throw down the
pretty much. It pretty much. I got the call and was supposed to be going to work, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not coming in, and also I quit. Sorry, bye.
I've only had one job where I had the pleasure of doing that, and it's the greatest feeling in the entire world.
It's so liberating.
So I'd worked for a bank, and the bank manager had just repetitively screwed me over.
Yeah.
And I traded shifts with the kid, and I'd already turned in my 2 weeks.
Oh, that's even the worst.
And I had traded shifts with the kid, and she didn't want me to trade shifts just because.
Just because you're leaving, probably. Yeah,
and I had a final I had to take. And she was just like, nope, you're not. And so, like, we traded anyway. And I show up the next morning, and the kid had stabbed me in the back and didn't even tell me. He called, like, after they got off work. And she had just told him, nope, you're going to come in. So she sits me down in her office and says, you're going to do things my way. This is how you're going to do it. And I'll see you at 1, okay? And then I just kind of sat there for a second. At the bank, we had keys on our arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of sat there. I was like, no, you won't. And I grabbed my keys and threw them at her and walked out the door. And I was just like, that was wonderful.
It's everybody's dream. Everybody needs to do it at least once in their life.
I think we should appropriately name it as the George Costanza moment. You know how to make the exit.
Exactly. It was great. I was so happy. I mean, I still didn't make that much starting out at Daily Show, but it was totally worth it.
Yeah, and that experience, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, it's the Daily Show alone is one of my favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
On TV.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I watch it. It's the first thing I usually watch in the morning.
Yeah.
So, what was that like to be involved with the whole process? And how closely did you really get to work with Jon Stewart?
Jon and I talked to Jon every day when I worked there. He was, you know, the blue cards he holds at his desk? I was the one to give them to him. Like,
oh, nice.
That was part of my job, was like, to give him the script all the time and make sure he was, you know, had everything he needed and whatever. So he is incredibly nice. And I was always really impressed with, like, how well he knew everybody. Like, I mean, I would come back. The first time I ever headlined in Utah was 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember I told my boss, Rory Albanese, like, hey, I'm headlining, I'm so scared, blah, blah, blah. And everyone was really excited for me. And I remember coming back, my first day back, Jon asked me, how did it go? Was it great? Like, was it everything you thought it was going to be, you know? And actually cared. And I'm like, this is, like, unbelievable that Jon Stewart's asking me how my little stand-up show in Utah went. Like, it really was one of those moments of, like, wow,
this
is unbelievable. Yeah, exactly. So they were always extremely supportive of me. And, like, they let me do some fun stuff. I was on the show a couple times and, like, fun bits. And did some voiceover work for the show a couple times, which was, like, unbelievable. There was a time when I was the voice of an Emmy statue who was talking to Jon. And I'm, like, backstage with headphones and a monitor reading the lines. And I'm, like, I'm talking to Jon Stewart in, like, on TV. This is insane.
Let alone as an Emmy.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like, it was just, there were so many cool things like that they were so willing to let me do. Which, you know, you can't ask for much. I mean, they would let me leave work to go audition for a voiceover or for something. I mean, they were, like, totally supportive, which was, again, like, a dream
right.
job. But so I interacted with Jon and the correspondents all the time. And
who were the correspondents at that time?
John Oliver, Asif, Sam and Jason, Wyatt, Sinak. Kristen Shaw was like on and off again. She now lives in Burbank really close to me, and actually
oh, really?
We both work out at the YMCA, so I'll see her every once in a while and gone to her house for a barbecue and stuff.
Oh,
but like
cool.
she's
hilarious.
So nice. She and her husband was a writer at The Daily Show. And he was so nice. So they're just great people. Actually, all the correspondents are really great people. Like, I really loved
all of them. I imagine so.
Yeah. I used to babysit when I first started. I babysat the Sam and Jason's kids.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. And then they started realizing, like, yeah, you've got a lot going on. We're probably not going to have to do babysit anymore. I'm like, that's a good thing. Like, we're a little busy now. Yeah.
They're hearing your stand-up and you're making fun of kids. Those are my kids.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I actually did one time, Asif and I did a bit where, because I'm Mormon and Asif is Muslim. So we did a whole bit on stage at a charity stand-up show that was like to promote religious tolerance. Like this money went to a foundation for that or uh-huh. something. So we did a bit where we compared like Mormons versus Muslims, and it was like one of the more fun things I've ever done on stage, because we just basically made fun of each other for 15 minutes on stage. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
Is that anywhere to even watch? Like, does anybody put that on YouTube?
I have begged Asif, please find the video of that, because we need to put it out there. It was great. Like,
yeah, that sounds like
we
that
worked
would be
really hard on it, and it was awesome. But no, he's never got the video out there. I wish it was. Every once in a while, I'll look for it because I'm like, I know it's out there. They recorded it, and it would be amazing to see again because it was a couple years ago, and that was probably one of the most fun things.
That's one of those things that would easily go viral, too.
Oh, I know. Trust me. Asif is killing me. He's killing me. Asif is a tease. He is the one who we would make fun of each other quite a bit. Like, he was just a great guy. Great guy. I love the correspondence, so.
How much with John being the executive producer of the Colbert Report, did you have much to ever really do with Colbert?
Not, I think they used to do a lot more together in the earlier years of Colbert.
During the transition of
exactly. But now, I mean, Colbert's like its own well-oiled machine. I mean, we don't really talk much during our regular times. Yeah. I don't think I've even been in their normal offices. Yeah. Pretty well, they get along great, obviously, but like I guess they're both run really differently, which is surprising. Seeing as, like, it's the same show, technically. I mean, it's the same idea, essentially. But, yeah, they run the shows really differently. And even though they're just two blocks apart, it's just a totally different schedule.
Yeah, that's... What was funny is, I mean, and I'm sure you've seen it, you know, out here in Utah, is how so many people think that, like, the Colbert Report's real.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know how many times I say, like... Oh, yeah, I work at The Daily Show. Oh, that's nice. I really love the Colbert Report. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, why do you love it? Oh, I just think he's just great. He's just so funny. I'm like, oh, it's not real.
Yeah. I'd gone to see Mo Rocca speak, like, probably 6 years ago down at UVU. And my friend and I, we as we talked to him afterwards, we're like, hey, we have to try to explain to people all the time that the Colbert Show's a joke. Like, he's not Mr. like extreme right wing. Like, he's making fun of O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And Morocco just kind of sat there for a second. And she's like, people think that out here?
Oh my gosh.
And I was like,
the
they very strongly believe it. He's just like, I thought it was fairly obvious. We did too, especially for the fact that it's on Comedy Central.
Oh yeah, no. It is the most bizarro thing to me. But I love that comment. Oh, that's nice. Well, I really like the Colbert Report better. I'm like, cool. That's cool. Okay.
I love how they are different enough.
Yeah.
But even though they are the same entity, it's hilarious to get both of their takes on the comedy of it.
Yeah.
Because John's just so straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And where Steven's got that twist on it, I mean, it's just so, it is so perfectly matched.
Yeah.
That it's hilarious that people don't get that.
I'll never understand. That it's a joke. I'll never understand. But I do love Colbert Report. I think, like, as far as them winning the Emmy this year, I think, like, totally. Why not? You know, they're hilarious. They've done some really interesting stuff. I think it's great.
Did you ever get to go to the Emmys while working on the
show? Yes, twice.
Nice.
I went to the Emmys twice, got to walk the red carpet, and, like, totally feel like I'm a celebrity, even though I'm not. And it was so much fun. Those are some of my treasured memories. Honestly, it is, like, you really feel like I'm as pretty as you. Like, you feel like I could totally hold my own on this red carpet with you.
Yeah.
Which sounds, I know I sound like Kanye, but it's just, but, you just love it. It's just the coolest thing ever. And to win both times that I win was even more exciting because it's like, man, now we get to go out and, like, party afterwards and, like, we won. This is awesome.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, like I said, you know, we've gone out the last few years just for some of the Oscar festivities.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, even just being there and standing a foot away from the red carpet, like, it's surreal.
I remember the first year, right?
I did it, and it was just like, you know, you've got blocks and blocks of Hollywood shut down.
Yeah.
And just watch the limos and stuff start rolling through. Like, it doesn't feel real at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the last few years, we've been able to go to the Live with Kelly in the morning. That films literally hours after it lets out. So the full Oscar stage is still set up.
That's way cool.
And so to sit inside the Dolby Theater, like, with the Oscars set up, and then, like, they always have some of the Oscar winners come to. Like, it's just, it's insane, that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And to feel like you're actually part of it. So in this last year, we were able to kind of weave our way through the press route of it, and it was just like, I don't belong right here.
You kind of just, it is very, the energy is really fun. It's cool to see the celebrities that you really love be normal. You know,
definitely.
Just talking normal and hanging out, and it takes away that sort of, you just don't become starstruck as much anymore, because you're like, yeah, I get you. You're funny and normal. Like, I sat in front of the Parks and Recreation cast and was like, you guys are amazing. Like, this is so cool.
That cast, I cannot even imagine. I mean, all of them have so much energy.
I know.
I don't think I'd be in tears the entire night just, just watching all of them.
No, you would fit right in. It's like, honestly, you just start to feel like, man, everybody here is normal.
Yeah.
We should just all be normal and have fun together. Like, it's just a...
I think that's just part of the industry in general.
I mean,
that's, especially in LA, that was the vibe that I felt 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where I was at, it was always just that, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So let's just have a good time. And, you know, whether, you know, you're the one who absolutely sucks or, and you're talking to somebody that's major, like, it's cool that, you know, everybody's going to... I mean, I got to meet Leno briefly while we were out there, and it was just kind of like, I idolized you as a kid, and then you pissed me off with Conan, but I can still respect you.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, it was surreal to shake the man's hand.
Yeah. I mean, you still have the LA vibe, you know, where, oh, there's attitude of, like, I'm better than you because I've done this, or you're not good enough because you are this. You know, there is still that mentality there, but unfortunately I feel like that mentality comes from the people who are who feel very insecure there.
Yeah,
you know?
I think the greatest lesson I'd heard one person say, and I can't remember her name, she never has had any, like, big role on a crew or anything like that, but she consistently has worked on different crews.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying, the biggest key is just be nice to everybody.
Exactly.
Be nice to everybody and you'll work consistently, because that's all they're going to remember. And it was funny because I remember one of the first agents I had with headshots. Like, they were going through something, one that I just hated. They're like, no, you have to use this one from time to time. I was like, why? They're like, because of the way that you're smiling, it automatically tells casting that you're easy to work with. I was like, right, I can be easy to work with, but I look like I could be Sloth's cousin in this one, so no.
Isn't that the worst?
And I've never booked anything with that headshot, so I've stopped using it.
Right, yeah. No, thank you.
So now that you've left New York,
yes,
and you're out in Burbank. Mm-hmm, you know what? Mm-hmm. What are you doing now out in LA? Are you still writing out there?
Writing like crazy right now. I feel like I am just getting started. I feel like it took me about 6 months in LA to even know what I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, I went there, I started doing shows, I did a couple comedy competitions, did really well in some. So I feel like, okay, I can do stand-up, that's good. You know, I got that. But then I didn't know what else to do. I was like, I'm watching way too much Netflix. Like, there's, I need...
That's how I felt, too, right away. I watched way too much Netflix.
Like, I know everything on Netflix too well. I need to get my life together and figure out what I'm doing. So now I'm doing a lot of fun stuff. I just wrote this, like, pilot pseudo-sitcom-slash-reality-show for this rich, awesome guy who's like, I really want to do this, so I'm going to give you some money and I want you to write it. And I was like, deal. So we'll see what happens with that. That's kind of fun. I'm writing for a blog every day. There's an online show called The Daily Rehash.
Yeah.
And it's like news and trends on Twitter and different things. They make fun of stuff and I do their blog. I'm like their only blogger. So if you go to dailyrehashblog.aura.tv, you can read tons of stuff, all written by me.
All written by you.
So that's pretty fun. I'm a regular guest on Allison Rosen Is Your New Best Friend, her podcast, if you've heard that.
I've heard of it, but I've never had a chance to actually listen
to it. It's really fun. I do her... She has two versions. She does one where she does an interview with somebody famous, and then she has her Thursday show, which is what I'm a usual regular guest on. Mm-hmm. And I love doing her podcast. It is so fun. We just talk about random... whatever, and we just make jokes, and it's great. So I'm doing that. Stand up still. Gotta keep,
you have to keep trucking away.
Gotta keep doing that, because it's a muscle, and if you let it go too long, you're not as good, you know, you're just not as good as you used to be. It's really annoying, but that's the truth. I wish I could just be great at stand up all the time. Yeah. You know, it's just, why not? It's not fair. What else am I doing? Lots of stuff. Writing, well, I know I'm doing more. I do TV movie reviews here and there, on and off.
See, and I'm so scared to try to do movie reviews, because being a film student,
right,
it's like where I'm just about to the graduation point of where I'm starting to write and get some of these projects ready to film. Like, I don't want to be that film critic that it's like, I'm going to tear this down, but now watch my movie.
Totally. I get it. See, for me, it's like, I don't make movies. So, you know, I have found people ask me to review it for the comedic value. You know, I don't know much. I know what I learned at NYU, which was good information. Mm-hmm. But I didn't study production. I don't know how to make a beautiful movie, but I know what a cool movie looks like because that's what I was taught. I think
there's a movie out right now that's a major movie that I didn't like, and people think that I'm just evil for it.
What movie?
Gravity.
What? You didn't like it?
But that's exactly what I get from people.
I saw Gravity, and I had some issues with it from the writing standpoint.
Thank you.
Yes.
That is exactly where I was like, it's beautiful.
It's
like,
unbelievable.
I mean, especially, I feel bad for anybody that saw it in 2D.
Yeah.
But well, it's a beautiful movie. But yeah, the entire time I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, why do I care about any one of these characters?
Where's my emotional connection? That it was too, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was that I needed more or less religion or more or less feeling, or it was just lacking for me emotionally.
My wife leans over to me midway through and she was just like, it's just like Castaway. And I leaned back and I was like, but I enjoyed Castaway.
You know, I kind of thought about Castaway too. That's really funny. I had issues with it too. You're not alone.
Good.
You are not alone.
Like I was reading all the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. And I mean, it's like 98%.
I know.
But when you read through them, none of them mention the story.
So it's like Avatar all over again? Because Avatar was a way worse story, I think.
Yeah, I never saw it in the theater, so I was one of those that was like, everybody said it's great. I'll just spend the $20 and buy it. And that was $20. I've now got over that, especially after All About Steve. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Was that Sandra Bullock?
Yes. Sandra Bullock and Bradley Cooper.
Yes.
Easily one of the worst movies I have ever seen. And I just sat there and was like, what the hell was that?
Oh, didn't it win a bunch of Razzies and or?
I don't know if it did. I mean, okay. I should have looked at that on IMDb or something.
So bad. Well, it came. They snuck that movie release in the year she won the Academy Award, and everyone's like, "Oh, I can't believe she won." Yeah,
that's true. Well, it was right there during Blindside.
Totally, they totally like snuck it in. Like, oh, we made this other movie that's terrible, but we'll totally capitalize off of her success.
Yeah,
right now.
And it ran through the theaters quick, mm-hmm. and then it wasn't in like Redbox or anything, and so that's we decided to buy it. We were like, it's got to be great. Bradley Cooper, Sandra Bullock. We can't find it anywhere. We'll just buy it.
This is a weird movie.
Yeah,
I can't tell.
It was just terrible.
Oh, so bad. That's great. Whoops.
So I'm glad to know there's others out there that sit through movies the way that I do, and I sit there and look at that full writing arc of. I've become so OCD with it where I'm like, okay, where did that first act end?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to develop it? Well, I just watched Side Effects last night.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, at first I was like...
I don't think I've seen that one.
I had my issues with it, but I liked it.
Yeah.
So, and the writing is very clever, but I've grown to love some of these thrillers where you watch for that little key point.
Yes.
And in so many of them, they tell you the ending 10 minutes into it.
Oh, I have almost every movie. Yeah. My husband has almost threatened to not watch movies with me anymore because I'm like, that's it. Pay attention to that. Pay attention to that thing. You're going to need to know that.
Yeah, see, and all I'll say to my wife is, I just figured out the entire movie. Really, have you seen Prisoners yet?
No, but I've heard about it. Yeah, I've heard. My brother told me it was amazing.
If Hugh Jackman, I mean, it's too early in the Oscar season. If he doesn't get an Oscar nomination for this, I will be shocked.
Really?
Is that good? He is excellent.
Oh, I can't wait.
He's almost overacting at parts for it, but it was okay. I was fine with it.
He's a theater guy. But they tend to do that.
There was one key moment where I just kind of laughed out loud, and I was just like, that's the movie. And there were still 2 hours to go.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing, and my husband hates it.
But when you've got that writer brain, it makes it more fun, because then you get to watch how they get to that point.
Oh, man. And then I think, could I have figured that out on my own? Like, if I were writing this, would I have been able to do that? Or how did he do that? Or when did he realize that that was going to be the thing that made, you know, was the...
And I think it makes you a better writer in general to be able to appreciate that and watch the way that story arc breaks down.
Yeah. See, and here's the thing. I love movies, but I love TV even more. And TV, I like super nitpick with script and everything, because it's like a great sitcom follows the exact same formula. And you can tell right away when a sitcom's going to be awesome or when it's going to be just okay. Or when, like, they've almost got it figured out.
Right.
Or it's almost there, you know.
That's how I feel right now with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Like, I like it, but it's like this overall writing, I'm like, just give it that little bit of a push. It's almost there.
Exactly.
And so it's like, it's kept me on board. Whereas a show like Dad's that I had a lot of hope for.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Like, I watched that first episode and I was just like, I feel nauseated right now.
It was so bad. And I love all the people who worked on it. So I don't understand.
Yeah, and that's why I was so excited, because of everyone that worked on that show. I thought it was going to be just excellent. And I lasted three episodes and I was like, I'm done.
Oh,
like,
you lasted longer than me.
I'll usually give it, because pilots can be difficult at times.
Oh, pilots are typically not great.
Yeah, and so I wanted to give it those couple extra episodes. And I mean, there was one part on the second episode that I laughed pretty hard at. But when it's 20 seconds from the end,
mm-mm.
you can't base a whole episode on that.
Nope. No. I'm anti that. I also feel like, as much as I love sitcoms in the past that have laugh tracks, like, you know, News Radio, Friends, mm-hmm. like, there are sitcoms that I love with the laugh track. I just think, as a society, we've outgrown it a little bit. And it's time to, like, move on past it, expand, you know, do more Parks and Rec type shows, Modern Family type shows, where we're really...
You have to think about the humor.
Exactly. I can't... The laugh track, to me, is very distracting now.
At the same time, I appreciate the live in front of the studio audience.
True.
Because of the fact that when a joke tanks, they can immediately cut and rewrite the joke and try it again. And that's because I know Friends did that.
Mm-hmm, they did.
And that was the brilliance, I think, that really kept Friends going. I think that's what keeps the Big Bang Theory going. Even 2.5 Men, which I think has kind of died since Charlie's left the show. But, I mean, that's what still keeps that even going. And I think it's an...
It's an art. It's
totally
like a... It's tough, I think.
Have you heard how I Met Your Mother does it?
No.
They have a little bit of canned laughter, But they basically show it to a very small audience after they've taped.
Weird.
And then they let them laugh and record those laughs, and then we'll trickle in the camp laughter.
Weird. How does that work with delivery for the actors, though?
I don't know. I believe I had pulled that off of Wikipedia. So who knows how 100% accurate that is?
Listen, let's just say we can trust Wikipedia.
But after I'd read that and watching a few episodes, I was like, I can kind of hear that now.
Interesting. Now I'm going to have to watch and see.
But I mean, How I Met Your Mother just shows how brilliantly written it is that they would have the guts to even do it that way.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I would be very interested in seeing how their editing works because, I mean, so much of acting in a sitcom is like waiting for your next line because there's laughter happening, you know?
And that facial expression, I mean, especially on How I Met Your Mother, I mean, so much of that you play off of, you know, Marshall's expression.
Right.
That's what makes Jason Segel so great playing him.
Right.
His facial expressions.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to totally
look that. Look up more on that. See,
I will. Mean,
you can call me out on it if I end up being wrong.
But, deal.
So as we kind of wrap some things up here, you've got, are you doing
four shows? Yes. So Friday, Saturday, tomorrow, and Saturday, 11th and 12th of October. I'm really delivering this information concisely, eloquently, brilliantly. I'm a creative genius. Me and Kanye. Let's see. Tomorrow, Saturday, October 11th and 12th, 7:30, 9:30, Wise Guys, Trolley Square. Tickets are $12.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong at that price.
It's cheaper than a movie.
Yeah, it definitely is cheaper than a movie.
Right?
And I know, I believe he's hosting for you, Travis Tate.
Travis is hosting.
So who Travis was our last guest on the show.
Oh, perfect. So you got Travis hosting. A couple of openers, I think. I don't know who they are, but they're always fun. And I'm doing, I mean, full 45 minutes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So, and everybody can find, you know, any information on shows, any of your writing on your website.
JennaKimJones.com. Check out the Daily Rehash. Follow me on Twitter because that's where I'm most active and most excited about being active online. So if you really want to reach me, Twitter is where it's at. And you can like me on Facebook or be my friend. I don't care. And I'm very enthusiastic.
When I friended you on Facebook at first, I remember I looked at it because everybody has like the fake accounts.
Right.
And like, but you popped up on my people you might know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is this really her? And then I noticed Keith was one of your friends. And I was like, okay, Keith wouldn't be on a fake page.
Yeah, Keith is awesome. And I think as far as like comedy in Utah, that guy has done wonders for the comedy scene. He is like...
Now, you live right by Flappers in Burbank.
Mm-hmm, right next to it.
Okay, you've seen their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Keith blows them out of the water.
Keith has unbelievable talent coming through Utah. He's so kind to stand-ups who want to work here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the fact that he will give a weekend to people who are just trying to make it. Like, he's just a great guy.
Yeah, he really is.
He's a great
guy.
So, yeah. Follow Keith on Twitter, too.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Yeah.
He's really, really
he's good.
Funny. So, cool. Well, thank you so much
for taking the time. I went to Subway before this, and I probably smell like bread, because that's what happens when you walk in Subway, so I'm sorry.
I don't even notice it. Or as Jim Gaffigan calls it, the bread exhaust.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, man, you went to Subway today, didn't you? Yes, I did. Get some my hair.
Have you heard his bit about Subway?
I have. Jim Gaffigan's brilliant, man. I don't even... He's my favorite of all time, probably.
I really don't know how he does it.
I don't either. His life is insane.
Yeah.
It's insane.
What is it? Five kids?
Five kids, two-bedroom apartment. Killing it in stand-up. His book was hilarious.
That is the only comedy book I have ever read where I laughed out loud on every single page.
Oh, as far as comedy books go, that's the book I want to write. What he wrote is like, dang it, now I have to come up with something. Like
our book, the physical copies, we should have any day here. And I'm like, I can't live up to Dad as fat. Like,
I know.
I look at mine, I'm like, it's not funny.
Don't put that pressure on yourself. We're all going to come up with our own awesome book. One of these days, that's going to be something I got to do.
Yeah.
Is work on a book because I have some fun stories and... as much as I love stand-up, there is something really satisfying about writing a full story on paper. So.
Yeah, there definitely is. Watching it all come together, it's a surreal experience.
It is, yeah. So that's One of these days, people. One of these days.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Get out and see her this weekend at Wise Guys. You know, it's going to be a show you're not going to want to miss.
It will be awesome, and I won't talk about Kanye, probably. So you'll, probably. That'll be a... If that helps, I don't know. Does that help? Come see me.
If you're going to be talking about, you know, the greatest person ever in the history of entertainment, yeah. People should want to see that.
Of course, because he's a brilliant man.
It's deep insight.
Oh, whatever.
All right. Well, thank you, Jenna.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys later.